You're listening to the Corporate Expat Experience. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Corporate Expat Experience. Today is a really exciting session that we've been waiting a while to do. And I know a lot of you have been asking so many questions about this. It's always interesting to find out how people meet each other. And when you meet someone who's really incredible and exciting and you can't wait to get them on the podcast, I just can't wait to share this with you. So without further ado, Beju, welcome to the podcast.
Nicole, thank you so much. And like you say, I've been waiting so long to do this, and it's been quite a journey and quite how, I know you can explain how we met, but I'm really excited.
Well, thank you. I am so happy to have you here. And yes, part of this journey, part of us meeting is a little bit of a, I guess, confession on my part. And I shared a little bit of that in socials. You and I both shared it, but I want to expand on that a little bit today and talk about how that chance meeting has led to this podcast, and also some other insights that we've had such great conversations that I want to share this, you know, what we've talked about and with our guest. So here's the confession. Yeah. I was eavesdropping. Yeah. I was in London on business, and I popped into Pret to have a quick bite to eat, sat down, looked to the left, and I noticed a book on the table that caught my attention. And I think for those of you who are viewing right now, you can see Change Your Game, the cover of that book and the several books, behind you that caught my attention. So I immediately grabbed my phone, jumped online. Who is this? I'm sitting next to the author.
Yeah. And I didn't know any of this going on. I'm oblivious to it. So it's not
had no clue. You had no clue. No, well, good. I was being discreet then. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, massively. Didn't know a clue. Yeah.
Well, and we've joked about this. At first, I thought it was an interview. I thought the person sitting with you was a reporter. And I was listening a little bit as I was checking out, you know, your Amazon page and then your LinkedIn profile. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Heard a little bit about your conversation. And part of that was name, game, claim to fame. So share with me yours so everybody gets to know who you are.
Fantastic. Great segment in there, right? So name, Beju Solanki. My game is I'm a psychologist and personal development, performance development coach. My claim to fame is I cut through the BS and get to the real core essence of why people are not showing up in their true potential, and by identifying their interference. And my aim is to ensure that everybody, irrespective of background, socioeconomic group, racial status, whatever it may be, can reach their potential.
I love that. I love that. And you've prompted me to work on mine a bit. Name, game, claim to fame. So everybody who's listening needs to write that down, remember that, and start working.
And at the end, aim, name, game, claim to fame, and what's your aim? And I took that for my mentor, Daniel Priestley. So he's a great mentor of mine. So the reason we do that is there's a science behind that, because everybody, we as humans, we need to put people in boxes because there's too much information. So what's your name? The game is basically what we all recognize. So my game, let's just say very simple. My game is I'm a life coach. Well, there's loads of life coaches, right? Claim to fame means, as a result of like, it's what's your essence? What's your thing? What's the thing that differentiates you? And as a result of that differentiation, the last bit is the aim. What do you aim to create or achieve or do? Simple.
I love that, because that fourth part of it is so important. I remember Jordan Peterson talking about what's your aim? What are you trying to achieve? But you also need those other parts to it as well that you talk about quite a bit in your book, which I'm really enjoying, and I can't wait to dive into the other ones too.
Fantastic. Great. So you need to finish your story about eavesdropping.
Oh yes, I do. So important note here, if you have a book, make sure you carry it everywhere with you and always put it on the table at restaurants. So that people...
Just to let you know, it wasn't me. It wasn't a reporter. It was a friend of mine that potentially was, you know, we're just talking about potential whether I was going to coach him or not, but that was it. It was very loose. But what he bought my book at an event I spoke at where he met me, and then he brought the book there for me to sign. So there you go.
Yeah, so yes, that's an important note. I didn't mean to say that you were just walking around carrying your book and showing it off, but it was the person who you were with who had that book. And it was, like I said, it was great for me because I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. And I'm like, wait, I'm sitting right by the author, hearing him basically kind of coaching and talking about some stuff that you talk about in your book. And there was this point where you said the name game, claim to fame, aim, that I almost fell off my chair because I was really trying to listen and hear what you had to say about it. And then I thought, oh, I'm being rude here. I need to get up and leave and I will figure this out. I'll figure out how to connect with them.
Wow. And you did, because then, whether it's that evening or next morning, I don't know, I get his LinkedIn message. And like, we all get LinkedIn messages, you know, left, right and center. And I thought, what the first line caught me, something like, I can't remember now, but something about, you don't know me, but I was in prep today. I said, I was in prep today. How? Who is this? And like, you know, we didn't have any mutual connections, or not that I remember. And then you basically just said, I was eavesdropping. I liked what you were saying. I've got this thing. Can we connect? And fortunately, I said, yes. And I realized that you were from Dallas. I thought, well, she was eavesdropping. She must be in the UK. So, you know, were you on business or whatever? And then you mentioned that. And then you said, well, how can we connect and meet? And I happened to be in London the next day. I said, well, if you can be, I'm available this time next day. Because I think it was a Wednesday and you were flying out on the Friday. Right. So that Thursday I was in London for another event. I said, well, I've got this window. If you can be. And you said, yeah, come meet me at the Renaissance at St. Pancras. And we met.
Isn't it amazing how the stars aligned to make this happen? It was really great. And as we sat there and talked when we met up, just we had so many things in common. And it was really a wonderful, exciting thing to have happen. It was just, you felt like it was divinely orchestrated here. So very cool. And, you know, in that, one of the things that I shared with you is this thing that just kept coming to me was just ask. And it was in that kind of spirit that I said, okay, I'm going to send him a LinkedIn message. And if he answers, great. Or if he thinks I'm a crazy lady, that's fine too. but just ask, because if you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Absolutely. And I think, and I did a, like yourself, I did a LinkedIn post about it. So a lot of people who may be listening to this will be, oh yeah, that LinkedIn post. And then people love the story. They love the randomness. They love the you know, you said you're eavesdropping. Everybody eavesdrops, whether it's intentional or, well, we all love a bit of a voyeur and gossip. It's where that takes us and what the intention is. And then you could have easily said, you know what, I'm too busy now, I'll later, and then whatever. But you just took the bull by the horns. You know, the worst case scenario, I never see it, don't reply.
Right.
Next case scenario, yes, but no thanks, not interested, or whatever, you don't know. And I think a lot of people read the LinkedIn post and took a lot from that. And they were, and what's even better, they're excited because since then, have you done that podcast with the American lady yet? Have you done?
And I told you, I've had the same response. I've had people reach out and they're like, oh my gosh, when are you going to do this? I can't wait to hear the story. And this is huge. This is really a story that's resonating with a lot of people. And I think the synchronicities, the alignments, but also how many times have we wanted to ask, or we wanted to introduce ourselves to someone, and we haven't taken that chance. I know I had and I'll get into that in another podcast episode, but I had a random chance moment to meet a couple of people on a TV show that were like, actually had an impact on me directly from one of their episodes. And I wanted to share that, but I didn't. And I was enjoying the moment and savoring it. But at the same time, I really wish I had done that. So that's where this just ask, I think, originates from.
No, absolutely. And I'll say it because one of my clients, ex-clients, Andy Lopata, somebody, a mutual friend, tagged us on that LinkedIn post and said, hey, look at this, right? And the reason that he tagged him, because he wrote a book called Just Ask.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, oh yeah, well, it does work. And I think it's not just in a business context, at any kind. Imagine, you know, you see someone, you know, you fancy and you want to ask them out and you're afraid you can't, oh, why they will say yes to me, not yes. Just ask. And but I think the background to this is the reason we don't ask because we're fear of the potential rejection or non-response. And I think this goes back to sort of fear, and we're going to talk about, you know, being an ex-corporate going into entrepreneurial life. It's about the fear of handling the failure as opposed to the failure itself.
Right.
Right. So I can ask and you can say no. Can I cope with the feeling of the no?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the no means I don't get the next step. Fine, I don't get the next step. I'll try over there.
Right.
But so that we don't ask or don't do the thing because we don't necessarily fear the failure per se, but the feeling that can we handle that rejection and feeling of not worthiness or whatever that means for people. And that's why we stop ourselves and overthink or reanalyze and second guess ourselves.
I know that resonates with so many of us, but especially for people who are contemplating that next change in their life and or that next phase or making a jump or leap. Maybe they're not happy where they're at, but it's that fear of the unknown, that fear of, I don't know what's in the future and it might be bad and it might be something ugly. And that holds people back so much.
100%, 100%. I mean, we're going to talk about it in the career context, but then thing is, right, whatever we decide, it's not going to be bad or good in the future. It is what it's going to be as a result of your choice and decisions now. And it's only good or bad based on your response or reaction to it. We all know the stories of failure. There's always lessons in failure. So the bad thing, the breakup of the relationship, the losing of the job, the not getting the deal, making a decision that's not informed, regretting a decision you didn't make, all of those things are around building character and being uncomfortable in the moment. And we don't like being comfortable because humans don't want change. They want a level of certainty, but uncertainty where it's controlled. That's why we like fun fairs and adventures, because there's an element of control, although within the moment there's uncertainty. But in life, uncertainty, a lot of people can't handle that. And they think the perception of a salary is secure because I'm certain on the 28th of each month, there'll be more money in my account. And right. Then I just have to make sure I survive the next 4 weeks to get the next bit of money. Whereas in entrepreneurial life, the uncertainty, what you saying, this one phone call, if they say no, you ain't going to see more and no money for the next, oh my God, no. And it's all that stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where we have a synergy. I mean, you've lived that. Whenever I looked you up on LinkedIn, I was like, oh, wow, I love what he's saying and be a great guest. And oh, bonus, he's a corporate expat too. So you're in the corporate world.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I've been, my first job was an academic. I was a psychology lecturer. So I was in the academia world, the education world. I'm not a natural entrepreneur. I didn't start my entrepreneurial journey until 37. So I fell into being a psychology lecturer because I had a degree in psychology and that was a natural. When you know, there was a job, advertised. I didn't know, I wasn't wanting to be a sports psychologist. That was where I was going.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw this job saying I was a part-time psychology lecturer. The only essential is a degree. Everything else is desirable. I said, well, I've got nothing else desirable, but I've got a degree. So I might as well apply. And then I got this part-time job, which then led to a full-time. And I was doing that for 4 years before I left and went into the world of corporate. Again, I only wanted to be there for 6 months, but ended up being there 9 years, which we can talk about.
That happens to so many people, though. I kind of felt the same way. We joke in my family that I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs and business owners, and I was the rebel. I went the corporate route.
Right. You're the rebel going into that world.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And didn't know if I was going to stay. And then all of a sudden you have a 20-something year career in corporate. So I can understand that. So when Absolutely. You were in corporate, what were you doing? And
so I wanted to be a sports psychologist. So when I was teaching, I took a part-time master's in sports psychology. And it got to the point where I had to just finish my last survivor, the master's dissertation. And in academia, if anybody's in academia, the longer you stay there, you can get institutionalized and you can start ending up being so in a world where it's just about assignments and marking and academia, and you don't part of the real world. And I was very conscious of that. So I left my teaching job to find some interim sales job so I can just do that for 6 months to finish my master's. So it was the August of 98, I left and started this sales. And the sales job, again, I just literally classified papers, found this sales job, no experience, training on job. There was no training on the job. And I applied for it and I got it. The most fortunate thing about this, it wasn't selling widgets or double glazing or Hoovers. It was selling marketing packages for universities to recruit international students. So my target audience was academia. And I've come from a world where I'm a psychologist. And that was a bit of a, I don't do sales. I don't do that dirty thing. I've got a degree, don't you know? Excuse me, expect me to sell. So I went into this job. I finished my master's, and then as soon as I finished my master's, I got a really good deal. And in sales, as you know, if you get, you earn commission, and we got paid on order. So imagine if you got an order on a Monday, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever it's worth, you could put the commission claim in on a Tuesday and get your commission on the Friday.
That's amazing. Right?
And we got paid weekly, and we got paid on order, and they used to pay us 80% of what's due. So say I earned £1,000 commission, I would get £800. And the 20% would go in what they called a cancellation fund. Mm-hmm. So there was no, so my boss was completely old school. Everybody's motivated by money. So if I'm going to give money, the worst thing I would do is take it back off them if the order doesn't come through. So we'll just create a cancellation fund. So it worked in that. So all of a sudden, in this 1 week, I earned more in that 1 week than I did a couple of months teaching. So I thought, bloody hell. And timing wise, I thought, all right, do you know what? I stay here for a couple more months and I'll go and do my sports psychology later. The more I did it, the more I become good at, you know, just earning a lot of money. But unknown to me, we had no sales training. It was very quite raw in this company, right? It's like, you know, there's a rope, you climb or hang yourself, choose, right? That was it, really. But the nature of the job was required me to go to universities and speak to deans or faculties, heads of marketing departments. So the academic world, to set up meetings, to show them how, and this is just pre-internet. So the way we would recruit students, we had a magazine and we used to go to fairs around the world. So at its core, I was selling ad space. So at its core, I used to go to universities and basically show them how we could get them leads for international students. And because international students pay 4 times the fee, it was a great cash cow for them. But when I went to the universities and had these meetings with academics, I turned my lecturer head on, academic world. So I didn't want to be seen as this horrible salesperson, right? So I went there and just basically talked shop, like psychology, academic world, university. And naturally, because I literally wasn't a tactic, it wasn't a strategy, I just didn't want to be seen as an icky salesman. And I used to just talk the stuff. Anyway, we used to have an hour or 2 hour meeting, and the last 10 minutes they go, so what do you think we should do? I said, well, we've got this magazine. I think, can you have a couple of pages there? We've got this trade fair, do that. And I used to sell really big packages. And I used to come back to the office and they go, what? Because you don't get many sales, but when you do, they're flipping punchy. They're big ones. I said, well, then I'm just talking about stuff. And then I started doing my own training, reading about, you know, Brian Tracy and, you know, Dale Carnegie about the art of selling and how to win and friends and influence people. I started doing my own work around, and I realized, wow, I'm building rapport. Wow, I'm listening. Wow, I'm actually, when they ask in, I'm telling them this is what they should be doing and how they're going to get the results. So I was doing all the things completely unconsciously, Nicole. And then and then I got a promotion, head of the British team, head of the American team, head of this team, head of that team. And in the end, I become director of the company. And it was just like, but during those years, 1998 to 2001 in the UK, the idea of coaching started coming, right? Mm-hmm. Life coaching. And there was a few things. So, and then I found this coaching academy school, and it was a weekend course, as you do. Paid the money, went to this course, and I got exposed to the concept of coaching and the ideas. And I walked away from this weekend thinking, wow, coaching is a practical way of applying psychology concepts in the real world. Psychology is a very dry subject, right? All psychology is, Nicole, is the proving or disproving of a hypothesis.
Yeah.
Right, that's all it really is. You know, someone's behavior in a certain crowded situation. Why do certain people behave this way? Why do super, you know, all these sort of things. Where psychiatry is the study of abnormal behaviors in functions. Right. So, to have psychology apply in the real world, it's a context within marketing or HR or leadership, and coaching. I thought, wow, this is really powerful. And at that time, we had a life coach in the UK on TV, but in America, Oprah was but she used to call Dr. Phil Gray. Do you remember Dr. Phil Gray on her shows?
Yeah, I sure do.
So we watched Dr. Phil, and I thought, that's who I want to be. He used to come on, life strategies, doing his thing. And I talked a great game between 2001 until I left in 2007 about what I'm going to do all the rest of it. But I had a load of beautiful, gorgeous, sexy excuses why I couldn't. And I know I'm going on a bit here. I don't even ask me questions, but I sort of, where we got to the point was I stayed in corporate till 2006 when I was in New York, about to close a massive deal with New York University. I earned silly money. I sat on the bed, excited for about 3 or 4 minutes. And then I thought, is this it? And that was the catalyst of me leaving my job.
Wow. That's really powerful. Really powerful that that question was the catalyst.
Because I was thinking, I've made a lot of money. I made my company a lot of money, but why do I feel empty?
And you what know, happened?
I thought, why are you not doing the thing you want to do? Why do you? On the flight from New York back to London, I wrote down all the beautiful, gorgeous excuses and reasons why it's not a good time for me to start my business. And because I had a young family then, wife, mortgage, kids, all the, you know, bells and whistles. And all the reasons were things where I don't know, really. Am I good enough? I don't know. Will it work? I don't know. Will people buy me? I don't know. Is it a good time to start a business? I don't know. Do you know how to run a business? I don't know. But the only one reason that was practical was, actually, if you left your job now, how long can you survive for if you without earning an income? I thought, oh, I don't actually know. If I did know, how would that inform me? So I went back. When I came back to the UK, I spoke to a few people, and the general consensus was, look, if you're going to start a business having been in corporate, is if you wait till you're completely financially free, you're never going to do it, right? So that you've got to understand your risk profile. You've got to understand that, what are you comfortable with? And the general consensus is having between 3 to 12 months money put away. And depending on your risk profile and your level of appetite, is then leave your job. And for me, it was 6 months. I thought, you know, if I've got 6 months put away, that will give me the reason to leave my job. So I didn't have 6 months enough savings. So I said, well, how am I going to get it? So in the UK, I knew a few people doing property investing, so real estate investing. So I learned how to buy and sell property by making money when you buy the property. So I did that. And then within 9 months, I remember October the 14th, 2007, I bought and sold a property. I just waiting for my solicitor say the property's been sold, the money's in your bank account. So now the money's in my bank account, I have no more excuses. So I literally got up, I had my letter of resignation written for 6 months, and I handed my notice in.
Wow.
And that was it.
So you created a plan. You figured it out. You figured out what that question was that you needed to answer, figured out an answer to it, started working on the plan. And it took only 6 months, actually, after it had taken so many years, right, to come to that.
Yeah, about 9 months from position. Remember, people think a decision automatically means the big action. Right. So let's say, you know, just take, I don't know, a relationship breakup. Right. So deciding, I want to leave this relationship. And the big decision is having the conversation. But it could be, let me put a few things in place. Leaving a job. Well, the first thing is get a few things in order. So a decision might mean several actions, not all the actions at once, or not the big action at the end. So the first decision was, my first action is, let me be informed about how I can be in control to leave my job. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
But for me, it was that cushion. So a lot of people, did I have a business plan? No. Did I know exactly? So literally the next day I'm at my home on my laptop at home. What am I going to do? I don't know. Got no one to call. No one's calling me. No one knows what I do. I don't know what I do.
So what did you do? Because that is what so many people, first of all, face, but then they also fear before they make that jump, is day one, they're like, this is great. I have my own schedule. I can do whatever I want. And then it's like, what do I want? What am I going to do? How am I going to do all of this?
Nicole, I did what you did. I asked.
There you go.
Right. So I found someone who did run them. What do I do? Because, well, they first things are go networking. What does networking mean?
Yeah.
Go and meet what other businesses who are also looking for business. What's the point of having been in a room of people that are all looking for business and no one's buying? Right. But then you realize actually it's not just about that. It's about the education. It's about actually it's not about selling to them. It's about their black books.
Right.
About who they know. And they go, okay. But then they say, well, if you go into a room and say, can you open your black book and introduce me to someone that you think uses my services, ain't gonna happen. So you've got to build trust. Right? How you build trust? You have to, you know, just go out and be someone who's interested. All the things about networking and all the rest of it. So literally October 14th, I left, and my first networking meeting was December the 7th of that year. And that was it. And then understanding that. And then as you do, you just have to do the work in terms of understanding your own stuff and personal development and going to events, seminars, being generous with your name, not expecting. It's like businesses going looking for a relationship. If you go on, oh, I'm going to find a date, but on the date, I need to find out everything about them and then marry them by the end, ain't going to work. Same in business. If you've got to go there and just, you know, what did Woody Allen say? You know, 90% of success is showing up.
That's true. That's so right? True.
You just got to show up for yourself and show up for the rest of the world. So it was daunting. It was, you know, it wasn't easy, but like you say, having that 6 months gave me a cushion. So a little bit of plan, but again, not having a plan so rigid that you can't be flexible on it. You can't be receptive to what's going on in the world. Like I wanted to be a coach, right? And life coaching was relatively new. Now you can turn a corner and life coaches drops down the sky, you know. But that's a different story. But
yes.
but then I again unconsciously I'm thinking, okay, if I go into a room, say I'm a coach, immediately they're gonna think, yeah, all right, whatever. What's your credibility? So I looked at my background, Nicole, mm-hmm. and I thought, well, okay, I used to be a lecturer and I used to be a sales director. So I'm gonna when I go to business events, I'm gonna position myself as a sales coach.
Okay.
Because I can't say, well, who have you worked with? Well, I haven't worked with anyone yet, but this is my credibility of sales, my own success. Running a team or the rest of it. And then I went to schools and said, look, I understand the pressures of leadership of academics. I used to be a lecturer. I understand the nuances there. And as a result of that, my first ever contract was a school coaching their senior leadership team. And I got a five-month contract with them of coaching. And then you just go on from there and do stuff. So, yeah, there's no exact science to it as an art.
No, but there's some important themes there too, because you did take a look at your experience and say, who am I? What am I good at? Where is my experience and how can I apply that going forward? And I think a lot of people get stuck on that because they'll say, well, I was in sales. What is that? You know, how does that relate to what I'm trying to do now? Well, you've picked up a lot of valuable skills along the way. And like you said, you know, sales, you're like, oh, I wasn't a salesperson, but you were a fantastic salesperson. You were genuine.
And I use that now. I position myself as someone who can help people, you know, increase their sales. And sales isn't an academy. It's a highly, highly respected profession. And that's the thing in the States, when I used to come into the States a lot, is it was in the realms of you've been a lawyer or a doctor. You know, if you're a sales guy, you know, you're top here. But the UK was icky, you know, borough market, you know, a bit of a shady character and all the rest of it. And, you know, or on the trading floor. But like we know in business, you can have everything in place, but if you can't sell, you ain't got a business.
That's exactly right. And that goes for every business. You need to have some type of sales skills.
Absolutely.
And networking is so important too. And that's something that I don't really teach you in corporate. You kind of pick it up along the way or somebody else introduces you to the concept. And absolutely. Networks are so important for us because we're all connected and absolutely. We can all help each other out too. Yeah, I like what 100%. You said about going into something you know, these people were also looking for, you know, opportunities, but we're all looking for opportunities, but how can we help each other and exactly. learn from each other? That's how exactly. I approach networking and
yeah.
how I've seen some of the best people. And I try to emulate that. I'm like, what do they do yeah. that's different?
Yeah, exactly. And something you don't know, which is my first ever book was an ebook called The Seven Secrets of a Networking Ninja.
I did not know that. I knew you had multiple.
Yeah, that was my first ever book. And the reason I did that is because I used to understand networking. I used to teach, you know, you must have heard of the BNI network, you know, Business Network, Into Breakfast. So obviously, that's in the UK. And there was various other splinter breakfast groups as well. So I started, you know, training people how to network, both in, you know, breakfast events and generic cocktail events and, you know, lunchtime events, you know, the different ways of networking and understanding how, you know, 9 times out of 10, people network as if they're trying to marry someone on the first date, right?
True.
Or, you know, or just get them in bed or something. Well, I said, calm exactly. down, calm down, right? Because they have this tendency of thinking, well, I've got an opening, I've got to take every opportunity.
Right.
And they're afraid that if I've got someone in the conversation, you've got to vomit their flipping thing. And that's why the name Game to Flame, which I learned off Daniel Priestley, is so adept. You just allow in a very, it's like the elevator pitch, allowing allowing the communication where someone gets it. So give them space to ask a question back. Don't just vomit your stuff to them.
That's exactly right. I also, when I was kind of going through your Amazon page, I saw another book in there that has a great title. I'm an Entrepreneur.
Get me out of here. Yeah. I'm an Entrepreneur. Get me out of here. And that's based on the TV series, I'm a Celebrity. And again, that was my first sort of self-published book where I interviewed a range of entrepreneurs, and it was mainly going to be for interviews and audio interviews.
Mm-hmm.
This is before podcasts. There was a thing called Powwow in the UK where I'd give you a number, you dial the number, and then at the prompt, there's a code. You type that code in, I would do the same, and then we'd have a telephone call where then it's recorded. And that was it. That was podcasting then, right?
Yeah.
And then I record, and the aim was just to release these as a lead magnet. And then somebody heard that. He goes, why don't you transcribe it? So I said, and create a book. So I literally transcribed word for word every interview. I topped and tailed it with my lessons from, actually, here's the book. My lessons from the, my lessons, here it is, here, right?
I love it.
And I topped and tailed it with my, literally word for word, the transcript. I know people who can't see it. And then 5 lessons you can learn from this interview. And that was okay. That was that. So then, So. And then Change Your Game was the next book, and thereafter. So I've done 4 in total. This group you see here, Change Your Game, Play Your Game. Change Your Game is basically about where you are now, where you want to be, requires some change for you, which is three games. The mindset change, the strategy game, and the consistency of action. And then the follow-up book, Play Your Game, is once you've changed your game, you're going to go out in the world and play. You're going to experience, and you're going to do so. You're thinking, well, I've got all these tools now. When I go and play, I'm going to win always. No, you're not.
Mm-mm.
So, play your game is when you go out in the world, there's going to be a reaction where how do you respond to the failure? So, play your game is all about how do you stay on top of your A game to ensure you get the success and win your game. The third part of the trilogy is a planner, it's a 90-day planner.
Fantastic. Yes, I like that about the game. And I think you break it down in those 3 parts that are so easy to understand and are so important for us that if we can make things simple, I always say that, like, make it simple. People know, like, and trust you when you can make things simple for them, because it allows them to digest it easily. It's not a thesis they're reading, you know, or a major white paper.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're 100% in there. Coming from an academic world, it's very easy to go in this. And when I wrote this book, I wanted to write it in such a way where whether you're a 10-year-old, you know, 90-year-old, or whether an educated Harvard graduate, you'll see. Because the thing is, in life, right, life is simple but complicated. And what I mean by that is most of the complications we have in life are self-created. Right, a lot of the pressures are self-created. So life is going to happen to us. There's going to be unexpected things happen to us that put us off kilter, i.e. our own illness, our loved ones not being well, work things, people, our boss making decisions, which means that we have to make a decision that we don't want to make. So there's enough outside things outside of control that impact us. So the whole point of change again is identify everything that you can control and create a system and a strategy to ensure nothing ever enters that. So when life does happen, which means it takes you off kilter or you've got to respond to something that you haven't planned for, because you're so organized here, it doesn't have that much of an impact. But when your things that you have control over aren't organized, when life happens, you're in constant firefighting because you have to deal with that. And then on your mind, oh my God, I still got to do this. Oh my God, I haven't done this. And there's a knock-on effect.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's all about mindset, right? Getting started with that solid mindset and being resilient, being organized in your thinking, also noticing your thoughts too. That's where a lot of people that I talk about, and really one of the catalysts for this podcast was when I would talk to corporate executives, they would say, I wish that I could be an entrepreneur. I wish I could leave and go start my own business. So I'd say, okay, so why not? Why aren't you doing that? Oh, I don't know anyone who's been successful. Okay, well, I do. And one person said, show me. And so I said, sure. Actually, I'm going to start a podcast to show everyone. And it does go back to that mindset. And if you're able to hear people's stories, like your other book, to share the stories of people who've done it before, then it can become real. But it goes back to those thoughts. How do you think about this? If you think that no one can do it, then
you'll be proving right. Yeah,
exactly.
Now, whether you believe in the sort of woo-woo of law of attraction and manifestation, right? If I talk to someone who doesn't believe in that, I say, great. I don't talk about positive or negative mindset. I don't talk about necessarily about, you know, being happy all the time, right? It's about being intentional, right? So when you wake up in the day and you're feeling good and things are great, it's easy to do great stuff. It's easy to go to the gym when you want to go to the gym. It's easy to, you know, ring that client for closing the deal when you have no, when you feel bravado and all the rest of it. But when the things aren't going well or you don't feel great, is what's your intention in that moment, right? So what's the conviction you have to have? So I talk about in one of my videos, I talk about the difference between, do you wait for confidence to occur once you've taken an action, or do you need the confidence to take the action? So instead of having confidence, you say, okay, have conviction and intention. That's it. The rest will follow. So in any given moment, what's the intention that I need to take in this moment? Do I make this phone call? Do I respond to that email? Do I start that project? Do I finish this? Do I allow myself to get distracted? And then what's the conviction you have to complete the task? Mm. If you just have that premise, whether it's in a business context or in life, you'll get more things done than not.
I watched that video actually yesterday. It's such a good video. You have to check it out on YouTube for sure.
The conviction confidence one.
Yes. Yes. And then taking that action, right? That inspired action, because that's where we trip up. A lot of times we can get ourselves there mentally, but it's actually doing the thing. We might build ourselves up and say, we can do this. And then you just kind of sit there, you stall.
Mm. And the reason we stall is we take the first action and then the outcome isn't what we expect or want. What happens then? We stall on the second action. So the key is not to attach yourself to the outcome. Be committed to the outcome, but not attached to it. So when the action occurs, an outcome will occur. When you take any action, you'll either get what you expect or want. When you take an action, you'll either not get what you want or not expect, or you get a miracle. So think about you sitting in prep, your ears dropping over a conversation. Intrigued, interesting. You walk away thinking, right, I could take an action and one of three things will occur. I'll get the outcome I want. I don't get the outcome I want, or a miracle. Now, which of those three happened to you?
I think it was a miracle, honestly.
Right. There you go. So it's a miracle. So the outcome could have been, yes, I'll be in your podcast. I could have been quite vanilla about it. Yeah, I'll be in your podcast. I'll let you know my diary, exchange a couple of Zoom links, and then that's it. And then in the future, send a link. But the miracle of, well, actually, why don't we meet up? And then we met and there was a synergy and there was a connection. And then we told the story and the whole world knows about it now and all the rest of it. So we're just waiting for Oprah, but that's a different story. Do you get what I'm saying? So there was intention there. You created the intention of, I'm just going to ask. That was the intention, right? And the conviction of whatever occurs as a result of this, I'm okay with it.
And I could have stopped. I could have stopped. And you asked me about this. Did you have any inclination to stop at that moment in prep when you were getting up to walk away? Yeah. And I did, honestly. A little bit of me says, do it. And then honestly, it was mind your manners because they're deep in conversation. I don't want to interrupt, but I said, I am going to follow up. And I did follow up and I made time for it.
You followed up because you knew my name because of the book. If the book didn't appear, what would you have walked out? Or would you have interrupted?
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know. I probably, to be quite honest, if I didn't put the pieces together, I probably would have said, before I fall out of the chair, I'll just leave. And I would have left and nothing would have happened.
Or you would have taken a picture of me, use Google Lens and say, right, can
possibly,
you Google
it? I would have taken a little slide picture and go, okay, now I got to figure out who this person is, run some AI on him, get some facial recognition going and track him down. I'm not that crazy though.
Can you imagine that? Yeah.
Actually, I think at that point, it would have been a miracle if you had responded to me, a very crazy one, because like, who is this person? Yeah. How did she know who I was?
Yeah. No, I get it. But there's a lot of lessons in there in terms of just being aware of our own, when we're in the moment of not taking an action, what's the conversation in our head? And it usually is, oh, what's the point? Oh, I won't get it anyway. Oh, I don't want to seem naggy or interrupting someone, or will they think I'm stupid? All these things. And that's also in the leadership game. You know, I'm speaking to a potential client this morning, and their biggest issue is their leadership team doesn't often ask the question, which then leads to assumption. And the background behind asking the question to their fellow leaders is the fear of looking silly or stupid. But they don't, because they feel that, but then they assume. And then there's number of occasions where the outcomes have had a significant detrimental impact on some client work or whatever. So part of the conversation I have with me is, how can we get them to just not be fearful? And like you say, just ask.
Well, I think also there's been in the corporate world, I experienced that so many times where people were reluctant to raise their hand to say they needed help or to ask a question because they didn't want to be perceived as daft or stupid or not able to perform if they asked for help. And I was in a meeting one day with the CEO of a global tech company, and somebody raised their hand and said, if you want me to do that, Madam CEO, I'm going to need help. And people in the room were just like, oh, I can't believe he asked that. And she said, that is the smartest person in the room right now. That is the smartest person, because he asked the question, he asked for help, he knew what he needed, he asked for it. And if you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Yeah. Great leaders don't give great answers. Great leaders ask great questions.
Ah, that's so good. I love that. This has been such a fun journey, not just the session.
Are we done? Are we done?
We're getting close. Yes. I could talk to you all day. I mean, seriously, I think we proved that we were there for quite a while when we met up. And
We'll have to do a part two then. Maybe the part two needs to be me face to face, you in Texas or Dallas or wherever. Where are you, Dallas?
I'm in Dallas, and I think that would be phenomenal. We need to make that happen. Okay, that's a goal. We're going to make that happen.
2024. Should we put it out here? 2024, you're going to do an event, and we're going to have the American perspective and the British perspective about leaving your corporate entity to start a business, and we're going to give you the strategies to leave and the strategies to then start.
Okay, I'm definitely going to have to get the transcript on that, because that's exactly what it is. That is brilliant. Beju, this has been phenomenal. How can people work with you? Where can they find you?
Well, I'm very fortunate to have an unusual name that if you Google me like you did, you find me straight away. So I'm good on that. But you know, you mentioned about the sort of my simplicity of my framework, or the Change Your Game framework. So I've created a scorecard called the Change Your Game Scorecard. And it gives you an indication of how strong your inner game is, your mindset and the context you live your life, the game plan you have for your business and life, and also how strong you are in terms of the outer game, the consistency of taking actions. So the easiest thing they can do that. But also, if they want the gifts, the books free, the PDFs, not the real ones, there's, I'm sure I can send you the links and they can download the books for free and get those PDFs.
Fantastic. Oh, thank you so much for that. Okay. So I always quote one of my favorite professors, Dr. Sullivan. He's my constitutional law professor. So as we wrap up here, any final words of wisdom or amazement that you want to share with the audience today?
There is someone out there waiting for you. And by you constantly procrastinating over your worth, your value, why you and all the rest of it, fine. So in one moment, create the intention of actually taking yourself out of the equation. Don't make it about you. And ask yourself, okay, if my message, if my word, if my intention was put out there, there's someone out there that they don't even know they're looking for you. So it's not as if like, where is she or where is he? As soon as you show up, they will realize, that's the person I need, and you will save their life.
I think our story is a little bit of a testament. I don't know if it's life-saving, but you never know. Maybe it will be for somebody out there. Maybe we are saving a life out there.
Yeah. And it might not be saving a life whereby there won't be tomorrow, but it's in terms of how they might a slightly different decision today, how they view the world in a slightly different way, which creates a domino ripple impact in other things they do.
I know that my world has changed since we had our chance encounter of meeting, and I'm so incredibly grateful for it. I'm happy that I decided to just ask and that you answered and the miracle happened. So
Beijing, I'm so honored. Thank you so much for taking the courage to reach out to me. And imagine this, right? Say you reached out 24 hours later because you got busy. Right. We wouldn't have met.
That's exactly true. Neither one of us would have been available. We wouldn't have been able to, and we probably would have scheduled a Zoom and power outage or a headache or something would have changed the schedule, and we may not be here today having this amazing session.
Absolutely right.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here. You. And everyone, thank you so much for joining. Be sure to check out Beiju's book and his site. And until the next episode, bye for now. Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support this podcast, please hit subscribe, leave a rating and review, share it with others, or post about it on social media. For show notes, links, to connect with guests and more, visit us at corporate-expat.com. And be sure to catch the next episode with more insights and inspiration to support your corporate expat experience. Bye for now.